You are listening to an American Free Press podcast.
Joining me on the line is Michael McPherson, the executive director of Veterans for Peace and the co-chair of the Don't Shoot Coalition. Michael, thanks for joining us today.
Sure. Thank you.
Michael, I want to get into the Michael Brown shooting there in Ferguson, Missouri, in some detail, and the Don't Shoot Coalition and the demands of the coalition. But before we do, for the benefit of the listeners, can you give them a little bit of background about, of course, Veterans for Peace, which, as you know, I had interviewed Leah Bulger in great detail, and also the Don't Shoot Coalition, and a little bit about yourself, please.
Sure, that's a lot. So Veterans for Peace was founded in 1985 by a number of veterans because they were concerned about nuclear proliferation, the arms race between the Soviet Union and the United States, and also U.S. intervention in Central and Latin America, but mostly Vietnam-era veterans. We do have associate members who are not veterans, but we're 75 to 80% veteran membership, and we want it to be, obviously, predominantly veteran membership, keeping that ratio because we're a veterans organization. We have veterans ranging from World War II through the current conflicts around the world. In fact, we did have some veterans that fought in the Spanish Civil War until about 4 or 5 years ago because, you know, they passed away. We also have some chapters in Vietnam. We have a chapter in the United Kingdom. So if you are a veteran of a foreign military and you live in the U.S., you can join Veterans for Peace here. As far as myself, I'm a veteran of the Army. I entered the Army Reserve between my junior and senior year of high school. I went on active duty after college. So I was at E1, went to college and went through the ROTC program, went on active duty as a lieutenant, came off active duty as a captain, and just stayed on the Ready Reserve for about 9 years and resigned in 1999 from the Ready Reserve. So I have 5 years active, 5 years of reserve time. I fought in what they call the First Gulf War. I was in the 24th Mechanized Infantry Division. And I'm from Fayetteville, North Carolina, where the 82nd Airborne is, Fort Bragg. A lot of my family served in the military, so I have a long history of being around the Army and certainly respecting military service and respecting troops. I'm just really concerned with how troops are used, and I think our foreign policy is one of trying to control much of the world, and I just don't think that's a good idea, and it can certainly be the downfall of this nation in the long run, so I'm really, really concerned about that.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are.
That's good. Yeah. That's good, I hope so. The Don't Shoot Coalition are a number of local, and a few national, but mostly local St. Louis organizations, some that sprung up as a result of the crisis after Michael Brown was killed by Officer Darren Wilson. But most of the people, organizations have been around for some time. We have unions like SEIU and union-affiliated organizations like Jobs with Justice. We have African-American-based organizations like the Organization for Black Struggle and Urban League. We have faith-based organizations and churches. We have peace organizations like Veterans for Peace or the Peace Economy. It's a very broad spectrum of civic organizations involved because they realize that this moment, regardless of if you feel like Darren Wilson killed Michael Brown because he was protecting himself or for other reasons, that we're in a crisis moment and that tensions in the community were surfaced by this incident and they need to be addressed. So people have come together who care about the St. Louis area and its future and want to address these issues because they believe you can't have prosperity and peace without justice. So that's where we are.
The Don't Shoot Coalition just sprung up because of the Michael Brown killing.
That's correct. In the wake of the unrest that resulted from it. If there had not been the unrest, you know, we wouldn't even be having this conversation. So really the unrest is what spurred everything.
Okay. And you're an African American or black, however you want to call it.
Yes, yes.
Okay. With this shooting, of course, you said that regardless of how you want to think about the officer handled this matter, is there a grand jury being convened right now or it's about to
right.
be convened?
A grand jury's been convened, and I'm not sure when it was convened, but it's definitely been going on for the past 2 months. And that's the big wait right now. Everybody's on pins and needles as to when the announcement of the grand jury findings will be given. And, of course, what will be the response of local residents. If there's not an indictment, how will people respond? If there is an indictment, you know, there'll be celebration on at least some people's parts and other people will be upset about it. So there's just a big concern about, you know, what's next.
Okay. And what are the local demands, I guess, of the Don't Shoot Coalition?
So there's a couple of things going on right now because of the concerns about the outcome of the grand jury. And what we're doing as a coalition is preparing for the response. By that, the community response, we want to make sure that the response is constructive and moves us in a positive direction. And from our perspective, a violent, rebellious response won't be constructive. And so I want to just clarify for the listeners in terms of how, you know, myself anyway, thinks about the uprising that took place initially. People wanted to characterize it as being a riot. And a riot is when people do property damage because of a football game win, a basketball game loss, or a pumpkin festival or something like that. But when communities express outrage and frustration after state violence or a great injustice, that's a rebellion. Those are two different things because they're totally motivated by two different things. You can also have a violent rebellion or you can have a nonviolent rebellion or a nonviolent resistance. And for the past 90 days or so since Michael Brown's killing, the vast majority of actions that have been taking place by activists around the region have been nonviolent. Or you would have seen a lot more of that kind of thing on TV and you haven't. So I think listeners need to understand that this idea, which is permeating the region right now, that there is definitely going to be a violent response and that the protesters and activists are lawless and unruly and all that, it's just not the case. A vast majority of the actions, as I said, have been nonviolent actions and in the tradition, an American tradition, of taking to the streets and demanding redress. And that's what Americans do, and that's part of change. There's not ever been real change. In Washington, D.C., they talk about elections bring change, but elections don't bring change. People bring change. And the changes that have happened in this country happen through people being active, people organizing people and making themselves visible, and that pushes the political system. So we're just doing what Americans do. There might be some violence, and the idea from the coalition is to model the longstanding tradition of how Americans change things and hopefully pull any negative energy of violence into positive energy of the kind of activities that we're doing. So that's kind of a plan we have, is to be as visible and active as possible to model that type of behavior.
Okay. What are you guys actually asking for?
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. So in the short term right now, because of the crisis, we're asking for, we have these rules of engagement in terms of how the police interact with protesters to try to de-escalate any tensions between the two. We would like the prosecutor's office to give the community prior notice of when the announcement will be made so the community can get ready for it. And we have some safe spaces where people can get away from any of the actions that are taking place, and we're asking the police to respect those places. And in terms of our demands as a coalition that brought us together, we're asking for justice for Mike Brown, other cases of police brutality in St. Louis region, including transparent and independent judicial investigations into allegations of excessive force, and an expanded Department of Justice investigation into patterns of civil rights violations by police. And the second thing is an end to ongoing racial profiling across the St. Louis region, as documented by an annual Missouri statistics report. We want accountability for police practices and policies, including effective civilian oversight and review of shootings and other allegations of police misconduct. We want ongoing initiatives to ensure that local law enforcement departments represent the communities they serve. And we also commit ourselves to supporting efforts that lift up youth, provide leadership development, and promote the vote so that our democratic institutions appropriately represent all segments of our communities. That can be found on our website, don'tshootstl.org.
You're aware of what's going on in the news as far as the autopsy report and, of course, the video of Michael Brown in the convenience store. You folks are on top of that stuff. Is there any fault on Michael Brown's end as far as the coalition is concerned, or are they not really addressing that?
So I'll say the coalition isn't necessarily addressing individual things like the video, things of that nature. I'll say that we can't hear what's going on in that video, and no one really knows exactly other than the people, and there hasn't been a lot of I haven't seen an interview with the people involved explaining what was going on. So obviously the video is not a good video in terms of Michael Brown's conduct. But then we have to look at what people in the region are saying. Should Michael Brown be dead based on what that video showed? Because that definitely didn't show a confrontation between the police officer and Michael Brown. Now, in terms of the confrontation between Michael Brown and the police officer and the forensic evidence, a lot of people in the news said it supports the police officer's story, which is true. But it also supports Dorian Johnson's story, which both the police officer, Darren Wilson, as far as the testimony that's been leaked, and Dorian Johnson, who was Michael Brown's friend who was walking with him, both of them said there was a struggle in the car between the police officer and Michael Brown. So as far as I can see, the forensic evidence supports both stories and doesn't undermine either one. So for us, the issue is that Michael Brown was not armed, and that multiple witnesses, including witnesses who have nothing to do with the Cancel community that were just there to fix something in the apartment complex, said that his hands were up. So apparently his hands were up, and there should be at least a trial so that all this information can be put out in the public eye and that, you know, a jury can make a decision. That's what we generally would like to see, just a trial, you know, I mean, and then that's following the judicial system. We're concerned with the issues that have surfaced as a result of Michael Brown's killing, the lack of accountability, lack of transparency, just the police relationship with the community and how the police polices the community. You know, a lot of things have been uncovered, and in fact, there have been some reforms that have been put into place and also continued negotiations. So that seems to me make it clear that there were some changes that were needed. So we want to continue on with making those changes.
Is there, you think, a lot of racism in the St. Louis, Ferguson area?
I'd say yes. I would say that our country, which I care about a great deal, that's why I do what I do, because if I didn't, I'd just go somewhere else or just chill out and, you know, drink beers and watch TV. Which I do that too, but I do struggle to make things better. So I care about my country a great deal. But we do have a history of slavery and a history of taking land from Native Americans. And, you know, we have a history that we're still working through. So this, for me personally, it's not about demonizing the country or the St. Louis region as much as, just like anything, you know, when you have a past, it shows up in the present. And in order to make the future better, you have to work on those things. So, yes, there is a great deal of racism in the region. There's many places around the country, so I don't want to single out St. Louis. And I think that it plays a role, a big role, in what's happening. But another thing that I talk about when we talk about this case or this incident is that there's also a class issue. So it's not just about color. It's also about the relationship between people with means and poor people. Because many times police or the system, yes, it treats people of color, non-white people. It doesn't treat them equally, but it also doesn't treat poor white people well either. So both those things need to be addressed.
Of course, there's a lot of chatter on the internet, and there's a lot of comments. And I guess a lot of folks are of the opinion or of the mind that Michael Brown deserved what he got. And there's a lot of examples of lawlessness in the black community and the amount of violent crimes in the black community. Was Michael Brown, are blacks in general responsible? Do they have some responsibility for perhaps the attitude that police take towards the black community?
Well, you know, I'm a black person, and I don't consider myself lawless. I've never gotten in serious trouble. The only time that I've been arrested was an act of civil disobedience at a representative's office when I was resisting U.S. endless wars. And we live in what I thought is a country where, you know, we're a community, but we're supposed to also have individual rights. And we're not supposed to be looking at people in mass groups saying everybody is of any particular group is any particular way. So me as a black person, knowing that there are racist white people, I can't look at all white people and think they're all racist. That's wrong. That's not the way I should be looking at people. So I think that's the same thing with the police. Now, it's not to say that there are not challenges in the black community that need to be addressed. And in fact, they are being addressed every day. There are all kinds of activists and organizations working on the ills within the black community. And many of these ills, if not all of them, are the same ones that are throughout all of our communities. We have a violence problem in the United States of America that we need to change, we need to work on. So, yeah, I would say everybody has individual responsibility. So if you act a particular way as an individual person, you have responsibility for that. On the other hand, the police should not be killing unarmed people like they are. It's all across the country. We have seen all kinds of police abuse. There's videotape of it now. And police need to act differently. They need to be more respectful. I've talked to many young black men who are just regular people that are not violent, and are stopped, asked, do you have guns, or where'd you get this money from? I mean, just crazy questions. People in their own car, everything's good about it. You know, their license is in order, everything. Pulled out of their car, slammed onto the car, guns have been pulled on them. You know, this is craziness that's been going on, so we wanted to stop. And it's not just happening to black people. It happens to other people, too. But it happens to black people more. So what I'm trying to say is people have responsibility for individual actions, yes. But that's not what this is about. This is about racial profiling and looking at a whole community as if all of us are criminals. And by far, most black people are not. especially the friends I hang out with, because I'm not going to be hanging out with criminals unless I'm talking to them about moving their life in a different direction. And that's what I would be talking to them about, maybe hanging out to become friends so I can help them move forward. That would be the purpose of it.
Michael McPherson, the executive director of Veterans for Peace, a great organization, and the co-chair of the Don't Shoot Coalition. Michael, I want to thank you so much for the time you spent explaining all this to the listeners. And thank you for, I know this is a cliche, but thank you for serving your country. And of course, your entire family, as you said, you come from a long line of people who've served, and such a small percentage of Americans who actually do serve in the military. And regardless of the views you might have, we do need some people in the military. So thank you, Michael, for that. And thank you for the time you spent.
Thank you. Take care.